The Health Fix podcast teaches you how to take charge of your health naturally by giving you the information you need to elevate your health.
Hello there, health junkies. Welcome to another episode of The Health Fix. I'm your host, Dr. Janine Krause. Today, I have the honor of talking to Dr. Debbie Rice. She's a fellow ND just like me, and she's the assistant medical director at Precision Analytical. That's the company that produces the Dutch test. She's a naturopathic doctor, like I said before, and she's working in the trenches part-time just like me, so she also knows what it's like to see people and treat them one-on-one. She's focusing on hormone health, thyroid health, and adrenal health. She even sees some pediatrics, which is awesome. So that's kiddos in medical speak. And she's using diet, lifestyle, botanical medicine, and sometimes some conventional approaches, just like me, to meet patients where they're at in their health journey. Dr. Rice's passions include activism for access to health. Yes. Heck yes, high five on that. And yoga as well, and exploring nature, always high five on that. And today we're going to be talking all about the Dutch test. We're going to be talking about the burning questions that I have from my listeners and anything else that comes up in our journey today. So Dr. Debbie, thank you for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm super excited.
Yay. All right. So let's dive right into it, because my first burning question from my listeners is, what exactly does Dutch stand for? Because I've had to explain a lot of times that it does not come from anything that has to do with the Dutch folk.
Yes, very true. It's funny because at certain conferences, people will be like, wait, where are you from? But Dutch actually stands for dried urine testing for comprehensive hormones. So that's where Dutch comes from. And I know a lot of people refer to us as the Dutch test. The lab is Precision Analytical, but we're more famously known as the Dutch test for that.
Perfect. And, you know, one of the big things that we talk about a lot on my podcast is, you know, optimizing health, biohacking to an extent, but also, you know, how you can get the answers that you want. And we've talked with ZRT Lab and talked about their particular dried urine testing. And we didn't dive into it with Dr. Sava in terms of what exactly happens from when you pee on a piece of paper, because guys, that's what the Dutch test is. You are peeing on pieces of paper and you let them dry, and then you send them into a lab. And so a lot of people are like, okay, well, how does it go from peeing on a piece of paper to get to the lab to get some results? What's happening in that process?
Yeah. Well, luckily we have these amazing scientists that know how to figure out all of this stuff. Like, it's actually mind blowing. Like, when you walk through the lab and watch how everything happens. And I know, you know, there are some people that will call and be like, hey, can you rush that test result? And in all honesty, like, once it starts in the machines, we can't, because it's a whole process that happens with all of this. So once you pee on those strips, they dry, you send them in. What happens is we get them and, you know, we separate them out. And what we're able to do is almost like rehydrate those strips. And from that, we can pull the specific hormones depending on which machines they go in. And so for testing your estrogen, you know, there's a specific machine that runs that. For testing your cortisol, there's a specific machine that runs that. And so it's like it rehydrates everything. It pulls those hormones out of there specifically, because every hormone has a different molecular weight and different kind of signature, right? Just kind of like your fingerprint. And so every hormone has their own like fingerprint, and each machine is pulling that fingerprint, you know, to measure the estrogen, the different types of estrogen, your progesterone, your testosterone, your cortisol. And that's how we run it through the machine. So once we get that fingerprint going through, then we can assess how much hormone is in that sample.
Very cool. And these computers are, just so we can have folks understand, because a lot of times I get feedback from patients like, oh, I don't, this test isn't really proven. I'm like, well, wait a minute, there's some research here. But also we've got computers and we've got machines that are legit machines that are used in regular laboratories. So let's give some, you know, folks a little bit more in depth in terms of those machines. What do we call these machines, and how do we?
Yeah. So for the scientists out there, so I always get laughed at because they're like, Debbie, it's an instrument. It's not a machine. And so I'm like, you're right. Like, the science word is instrument, you know? Now there are a couple different ways to test hormones. There is an immunoassay, which is a type of testing for hormone. And then there is a mass spectrometry that you can do to test hormones, and the machine, the instruments. See,
I'm gonna
Dr. Brain versus science brain, right? the instruments that run these run a mass spec reading on these hormones. And what that means is it's a little more accurate and specific for those types of hormones. So immunoassay can be very generalized. It's almost like, okay, we have this big range that we will have for your estrogen levels. And so if you fall within this big range, that could be your immunoassay level of estradiol, let's say. But a mass spec has a much smaller, more accurate, detailed range that gives you a better picture of where those hormone levels are relative to the norms that are out there. Mm-hmm. So it does hone in a little bit more, like when we're talking about specificity, that's what mass spec helps with.
Yes. And so
they're big instruments.
Yeah, they are
huge, huge. And they work really hard day and night for a long time.
and these are instruments, folks, that are used in regular labs. These aren't anything, absolutely, you know, we're not like putting crystals out and being like, does my arm, you know, muscle testing, anything like that. And no offense to that. I'm not knocking that. But what I'm saying for is sure, this is actual laboratory scientific stuff that's happening here.
Research evidence-based.
Yes, yes. So let's talk about that for a second, because before we jumped on the recording, we were talking about a little bit of an episode that happened in Canada where we have a doc who is talking about the Dutch test not being valid. And so, and not having research backing, but unfortunately there is some research backing. And where can folks, well, first off, let's talk about what just give an overview of some research that's been done, and then where folks can find it if they're interested.
Yeah. So the big research that has been done is really proving the urine testing for estrogen versus serum testing and estrogen, and being able to look at the similarities with that, to not get too technical out there, because what we're looking for is validation, right? That's the data that we're looking for. We're trying to validate the data of dried urine testing, and we have validated it against serum. And serum testing has a lot of validation, has a lot of research. So once we're able to validate urine testing with serum testing, you have good data. And you can get this there. There is some information on the Dutch test website. It's usually under provider resources, but even, you know, if anybody has specific questions, you can also, as a provider, you know, you can certainly call and talk to the Dutch test about that. But we can point you in the right direction if you're like, hey, you know, I'm kind of losing my way here and trying to figure that out. We also have validation about, salivary versus urinary cortisol too. So we've done our homework, you know, when we're talking about offering this type of test, it is important. And I know that there are some people that don't think that testing is important. And that's their prerogative. But if there is research to validate it and there's information to support it, I feel like it's a responsibility to offer that for people that are wanting that information.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And this is why I offer the Dutch test, but also why I wanted to put all this information out on my podcast, because it's like, hey, we have a lot of people who are going to their docs and the docs are saying, hey, your labs are normal, there's nothing wrong with you, but the weight's going up, the hair's falling out,
right?
You know, the hormone, they're not getting their period, they can't get pregnant, whatever it may be.
There's hair growing on your face. Yes.
Right here. Yes. And it's like, okay, something's up. And why wouldn't you want to have access to information if there was something that could possibly tell you what's absolutely going on out there?
Absolutely. I mean, there is a part where, sure, you can, and people that have been in practice for a long time see certain patterns. And anecdotally, you know, in your patient population, absolutely, you know, your experience counts towards something 100%. But if you can use your experience and additional data to get information to support anybody in their journey, and it's an option for people, you know, if they have that as a tool for evaluation, I feel like it can be super helpful. It's made a big difference in how I approach my patient care and treatment moving forward too.
Oh, absolutely. It's a game changer, because yes, you can suspect something's going on, and then you look at the labs and you're like, whoa, so this has happened to me before.
Yes.
I was way off.
Totally.
And then also, I've discovered things that we didn't really realize were happening in certain cases. And also, yeah. The one thing I want to dive into a little bit, because the biggest thing for the dried urine test on my end is looking at estrogen metabolism. And sometimes trying to figure out the estrogen metabolism is somewhat of a conundrum because of the different pathways.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And sometimes, you know, on the surface, right? And by surface, I mean, looking at just estradiol, your estradiol might look totally normal. But if we look at your estrogen metabolism, we might see that there's a little bit of something off with that. And so that may be more the answer that we're looking for versus just your estradiol level.
True. And yeah. What we're talking about here is, like, a lot of times your doc will run your hormones and your doc might look at estradiol in your blood, but that's only one, like, snapshot of what's going on. When we look at urine metabolism, now we've got three different ways to look at things.
Exactly. Yes. It's like, you know, three different openings to a window, right? Like, if you only open one side, right, you get that one view. But if we can open this side and this side, we get a broader presentation. So we have a little bit of a more complete picture with that. And I think that can be additionally helpful.
Absolutely. So let's talk a little bit about some of the health issues that are best investigated using dried urine testing.
Oh, goodness.
I know this could be a broad spectrum.
Yes.
Like, how much time do you have?
Right.
let's go with some of the more common things that I hear in my office. And in fact, I think this might be a great time to kind of put out one of the questions I have from one of my listeners.
Sure.
In terms of the gal that was asking me about having sore breasts and having nipple pain and crying for no reason about 1 week before her period, but sometimes it could happen throughout the whole month. And she's wondering, okay, would the dried urine test be good for me? Or would I be looking at in terms of the Dutch complete test versus looking at a cycle mapping? So I'm diverting to you to talk about how those two different tests might be helpful. Cause I know, folks, I'm sorry, I didn't introduce you to all those yet. So we'll back up and go into that. But in this case with the breast pain, cause a lot of people suffer with breast pain. A lot of people have nipple pain before the period. And of course, crying. Oh my God. My husband's like, I know when your period's coming, cause you're going to start crying.
I know. I feel like they know sometimes better than we do. Where you're like, this happens every month. You would think that we would be, yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. It's a good question. And I think, so the Dutch test is really for females designed to do testing in the luteal phase of the cycle. So as females, when we're cycling, we have, you know, the first part of our cycle when we're bleeding and then when we're leading up to ovulation, that's our follicular phase. And then after we ovulate, we have this other change in hormones. So we have our progesterone is building up and our estrogen is coming back up a little bit. So in the follicular phase of our cycle, our progesterone's really low. It's not really doing anything. That's its job. It's waiting for signaling for estrogen. So estrogen does this really big peak right before ovulation. So we get this little surge of estrogen, and that all happens in our follicular phase. After that estrogen drops down, we have supposed to have this nice rise in progesterone and then a little rise in estrogen, but they're supposed to, you know, like, hopefully work together and not be too crazy. And then once they all drop off, we have our cycle again. The luteal phase testing is to really grab onto a one day of the cycle where that estrogen and progesterone are hopefully balancing each other out. And when we're talking about that luteal phase testing, the hope is that your body's following that nice little curve that I just described. But a lot of times, just because of stress or, you know, so many things that can influence our sex hormones, thyroid function, environment, sleep, all of those things, you can see different changes in estrogen and progesterone. And so something like the Dutch Complete or the Dutch Plus is like a 12 to 24 hour time of the luteal phase cycle that we're trying to get that good picture of that estrogen and progesterone balance. Now, people that have more predictable type cycles where they're like, yeah, you know, I have about a 28 to 30 day cycle or a 25 to 27 day cycle generally, right? We can get a pretty good estimate or guesstimate of when that really good luteal phase rush is of those hormones. And so we can get a pretty good picture in that one day of that estrogen and progesterone. If you have somebody that's like, it definitely happens the week before my cycle, right? But it may also happen around ovulation, but it kind of also happens throughout my whole cycle. Like I'm not really like, it's kind of like a free for all. So if that's more you, I would say the cycle mapping might work better, because what the cycle mapping does is it allows you to pee on these little sticks like every other day. And so what we get to see is from the start of your cycle until the start of your next cycle, what is the difference in change in all of your estrogen levels and your progesterone levels through that whole time? Because you might have some really crazy, funky, fun stuff happening in the follicular phase, and equally some other funky, fun stuff happening in the luteal phase, where if we just did that one day, we might miss, you know, like maybe 5 or 7 days prior to that, where say around ovulation, maybe you get a migraine every time, or maybe that's when you have those really intense, you know, emotions. And if it's quite variable, the cycle mapping test gives us a little broader window into what's happening with the estrogen and progesterone throughout the cycle.
Nice. That's a great description. And it's good that you mentioned it's every other day, because I have some people being like, I have to pee on a thing every day.
Oh, yeah. God. Yeah. No. And so depending on your cycle, right? If you have like a normal cycle, so say that you're around, you know, 28-ish days, or if you have a shorter cycle, or if you have a longer cycle, there are different instructions for how often you should collect. And I would say this too, if you know that there are certain days that you are symptomatic, I would say pee on a stick that day, right? Like if you know, you're like clockwork, this is happening. Or even if you're just more symptomatic that day, I would test it, and I would just write it on the Dutch test, right? Like migraine or super emotional or, you know, whatever that symptom is for you. Because that's the whole point of testing, right? Like we want to know what's happening with those hormones at that time.
Right. No, I think that's perfect. Now, I think some people might be thinking at this moment, like, what if I don't get my period at all? What should I do? Which would be right for me?
Yeah. So it depends on why you're not getting a period. So if you have an IUD, if you've had an ablation, you're probably still cycling, right? Like you're still getting ovarian signals. If you've had an ablation and you feel like you're cycling, but you're just not bleeding, that may be appropriate to do a cycle map, but you can also do ovulation predictor kits. Mm-hmm. So if you don't want to do, you know, if you don't want to do the month-long cycle mapping, you don't have to. You can certainly do the ovulation predictor kits. And that's where, again, you're still peeing on a stick every day, though, to find out when you have a little LH surge. And that LH surge lets us know when would be the best time to test for you. If you are not having a cycle because you're more like perimenopausal and you had like, you know, you were going a good run of like 25, 27, 28, 32, 27, and then you were like, 45 and then like, you know, 23 and then 37, you know, if it's more like that, it does get a little more tricky to figure out when to do testing. And I feel like cycle mapping might be more appropriate then, unless you can nail it down with an ovulation predictor kit. So it really depends on kind of where you want to spend your time and your money with that too.
Makes sense. Thanks for clarifying that, because I think is another big question that I often get in my office. Yeah. And I'm using it right to do the ovulation
predictor. Yes, totally.
Anything's going down.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes.
Okay. Yes. So I have another question from my listeners, and this one in particular has to do with weight. And someone is asking, can the Dutch test help figure out if hormones are keeping someone's weight elevated despite changing diet, despite, you know, working out excessively? Can we find out if someone is having trouble in one department or other?
Absolutely. I think yes. We do. In the Dutch test, we're testing niche is all sex hormones and cortisol or adrenal function. Like that's our specialty. So that's what we're testing. So we're testing your levels of estrogen, what your estrogen's doing, progesterone, what your progesterone's doing, testosterone, what your testosterone's doing, and then your DHEA, which is part of your adrenal and sex hormone component, and your cortisol, and then what your cortisol is doing throughout the day. And if there are imbalances in your sex hormones, whether it's because you have too much testosterone, not enough testosterone, too much estrogen, not enough progesterone to balance your estrogen, that in itself is a good evaluation to look at. Is that making it more difficult for you to lose weight, making it easier for you to gain weight? And then we also have this, you know, catabolic, anabolic presentation when we're looking at how well your metabolism is kind of like firing up or not with how your cortisol is running. So are you making a lot of cortisol? Are you using a lot of cortisol? Are you clearing a lot of cortisol? How is your body managing that cortisol? Like, what is that stress demand for you? And how is your body dealing with it? And I will say with that too, I've had plenty of people that are strong athletes. And more often than not, what I do find is that athletes, because of their nature and how they are, end up kind of running their body down. And so in this, it could be like overtraining. For some people, it will present almost like an anorexic picture because they've just used so much of their fuel and they haven't given their body time to recuperate. And that can also affect your metabolism as well.
Oh, for sure. For sure. Because if our body, if it thinks that it is not going to get food for days and days, then it's definitely going to hoard anything and everything.
Oh yeah. Like everything halts, right? Like you're like, all right, nothing goes, nothing leaves, right? Like everything is going into storage.
Yeah. Oh, so that's something, yes, folks, to think about there. Now, one of the things you mentioned, which is unique with the Dutch test in particular, is the cortisol metabolism, because we have saliva testing, which we can tell, you know, is the cortisol elevated, depleted. But with the urine, we can see how you actually break down cortisol. And I think that's something that, you know, in terms of trying to figure out your cortisol puzzle could be extremely useful in certain situations.
Absolutely. I think as much as, you know, when I was in school, it was all about the salivary testing for cortisol, right? And that's all about your free cortisol and what's free and available for you. Very important, right? It helps us with our HPA function and evaluating how that HPA process is happening. But we also want to look at what the body is making for cortisol and how it's distributing it through the body. And so this is that additional component of, if we just have the free cortisol picture, good. But if we have how much your body is making and what it's doing with it, better, right? So I do think it can affect how you approach treatment with that information.
That's good to know, because I think a lot of people might be thinking, oh, I had no idea you could figure out how I metabolize cortisol. Or I have a lot of folks that'll be like, well, I had a saliva cortisol test, or I've tested their saliva cortisol and it came back normal. And they're like, but I still have symptoms that keep me in this state of fight or flight. What's up?
Yes. 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 And that's the difference between what I call what your body makes versus what your body uses. And, you know, it's still a signaling, right? Like the body still has to signal in how much you're making and then how your body uses that and what it uses. So it is a next step in evaluating that stress adrenal response and use of cortisol and, you know, and DHEA as well.
Yes, that's another big one. I am noting that, folks, as I'm feverishly taking notes, because the way you just said that, Dr. Rice, is awesome. So that's going to be in the notes, folks, at drjkrausnd.com, because that one, how it's using the cortisol versus how we are literally, now I have to look at it, how the body makes the cortisol versus uses it.
Yeah. Well, and it's, you know, and everybody's a little bit different. And that's the thing, right? Like, say you and I were to test and we have a very similar free cortisol presentation, but we could have completely different metabolized cortisol presentations. And so that's where it looks at that individual treatment approach and what that means for you versus what that means for me.
Mm-hmm. No, that makes perfect sense. Now, I think the other thing I would be looking at in this case that goes along with cortisol metabolism is what you have is something known as the CAR, the cortisol awakening response. So I did get a question about anxiety and insomnia. And does the Dutch test give us anything in terms of ways to help us to treat anxiety and insomnia?
I think it does. When we're looking at the cortisol awakening response, whether it's the 4-point cortisol curve, which is what you do with urine, or the cortisol awakening response, which is done with saliva. So the cortisol awakening response is the reason why it's done in saliva. So I've gotten this question a lot is like, well, you guys have it in urine, so why would you also have it in saliva? Great question. So saliva and urine correlate very strongly, but what we have found with the cortisol awakening response is it's very particular to timing. So that cortisol awakening response has to be taken as soon as you wake up, 30 minutes after you wake up, 60 minutes after you wake up. And as much as somebody can pee on demand, we just don't know how much cortisol is still hanging out in the bladder there. But if you do it through saliva, we get it immediately. And that's why we do the cortisol awakening response through salivary testing so that we can get that immediate waking 30 minutes later and 60 minutes later. And this can let us know, you know, depending on what your cortisol awakening response shows, can let us know even indirectly how well you are sleeping. Were you able to get good sleep? Because if you don't get good sleep, it can also affect your cortisol awakening response, either by blunting it or your body feels like it has to make up for, like all of a sudden it wakes up and then it like overshoots the mark, right? So that can happen with insomnia or poor sleep. But even if you're sleeping well, if something is going on that's causing whatever is triggering that anxiety for you, your cortisol awakening response can also show that. Now, some people have a higher cortisol awakening response just because they're like naturally morning people, right? Like they just wake up and they're like, they're okay. And that's not necessarily problematic. It's becoming more problematic for those people that wake up and they feel that like hyperstimulation. They already feel anxious and, you know, jumpy and jittery. And that's where we have to look at that, you know, what is that symptom presentation as well as the information that we get in the testing.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, no, that's extremely important to look at, you know, that whole aspect. And I think I love the combination because of the saliva plus the urine in this case, because I think it just gives you the well-rounded picture as to what's happening. And then usually I start to tie into, do we need to do a sleep study? Do we need to?
Right. What I see? Absolutely. Absolutely. I think I feel like sleep studying is underused because I feel like a lot of us take sleep for granted until we don't, you know, until you're not sleeping and until you're waking up, you know, just tired. And so I think there's a lot to be said for sleep and sleep hygiene and even just, you know, the stimulation that we have on a day-to-day basis.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I have one more question here on my list from folks. And we were talking a little bit about athletes and athletic recovery. And you were talking a little bit about how the hormones might look as if someone's anorexic. Now, in terms of gauging athletic recovery, I think that means overtraining as well. But I'm also kind of going into, if someone's struggling as an athlete to also keep their weight off, so they're also noticing this as well, what aspect of the Dutch test would they want to be honing in on a little bit? Because I know this question is similar to what you were asking before, but will we be looking at cortisol in addition, or are we still kind of looking at what cortisol, you know, I guess this is a hard question because we don't know the factors here in this question, other than could someone use, I think what this person's asking is, could someone use the Dutch test to predict how well they're recovering from workouts? So I think it is more of an overtraining kind of question. Maybe we already kind of talked
about that. Yeah. I mean, I think I would definitely hone in on that cortisol. Now, sex hormones could also be affecting that, right? So our androgens, our testosterone, and our DHEA. Again, DHEA, super complicated because it is considered a parent hormone and it does influence our sex hormones as well as our adrenal hormones. But those androgens can also have a big influence on your drive, your motivation, like physical and mental motivation, as well as muscle mass. And then that cortisol presentation too, like how is your body building that cortisol? And remember that cortisol is also, you know, best friends with the thyroid. And so when we have a high demand for cortisol, we also have to look at thyroid function because thyroid is our main metabolizer and can influence, you know, sweet little gland right here, also influences so much of how we metabolize that cortisol too. And so in looking at cortisol, we can see, all right, well, how is the body producing cortisol? How is the body using cortisol? And do we need to look at thyroid function probably with that as well, just because they will all tie in together when we're looking at training and metabolism.
My goodness. Yes. Good point. Good point. Because it seems like they can, one can't go without the other in terms of the thyroid and the adrenal glands. They are our friends. And if one's off, the other's off, and they play nicely off of each other, it does seem, or not so nicely.
Actually. Or not, right? Like if one is kind of failing, the other one has to make up for it until it burns out, right? So we have to make sure that we're not burning anybody out either.
Yeah, which is a big thing with athletics, like you were saying, and overtraining. And I think for a lot of ladies who are trying to lose weight and they're struggling, the tendency is to cut the calories and then work out harder. I don't know how many people come into my office and they're like, yeah, so I'm eating 1,000 calories a day and I'm doing, you know, two HIIT workouts a day, or it's like 4 HIIT workouts a week. And I'm like,
I know. Yes, the same reaction. because a lot of times it is overtraining and the body, again, doesn't know how to respond to that, right? Like, it's almost like you're expecting your car to work on less gas, but go further, right? Like, and we know that logic, right? We all know that logic, but that's what our tendency is to do, right? Well, I'm just going to work harder and I'm going to give less, but it usually has to do with, okay, well, let's look at what's happening with your metabolism right now and what we can do to help that.
Absolutely. So folks, yes, use the Dutch test to help to figure out why you're not getting your gains in the gym.
Yes. Yes.
Now I have another question for you. We're going to take it to a different turn, a little bit more on the male side of things, because I don't want to leave the guys out, because I do have some male listeners, and I tend to kind of figure out between urine and saliva, which guys kind of in my practice are best for which department. But I'm finding that I've got a lot of younger guys who are seemingly having some estrogen metabolism issues. So I'm looking into going, perhaps we consider Dutch test for the fellas too in this case. And of course, because we can tell testosterone metabolism. Can you tell us a little bit more in terms of why a guy might want to be using a Dutch test, one, just in general to assess testosterone, but also for one, they might look at it in terms of using TRT?
Absolutely. Yeah. So, In looking at testosterone metabolism, I feel like it's good to know how much your body is producing, what's available for you to use, as well as we can see how your body, so testosterone converts into estrogen downstream. And so the difference is males have a lot more testosterone than females do, but they all follow the same pattern. And so when we're looking at your testosterone production, we want to see how is your DHEA, how is your precursor hormone? Mm-hmm. How much testosterone do you have available? And how potent is that testosterone for you too? So when we look at testosterone and metabolites, we also look at 5-alpha-DHT, which is an important metabolite. That 5-alpha-DHT is the most potent androgen metabolite. And so that lets us know how strong is that influence of testosterone on your body. So we can see that with your 5-alpha-DHT in the Dutch test, but we can also see how is your body converting that downstream into estrogen. And once you make that estrogen, are you making an appropriate amount? Because I feel like estrogen gets a bad rap, especially for males, because everybody's like, nobody wants any estrogen for males, but that's not true. We have to have estrogen because estrogen helps to potentize those testosterone receptors, right? If you don't have estrogen, you can't get the little signal that testosterone can work, right? But it's all a, you know, Goldilocks game. It has to be in the right amount. And so, but we want to make sure that you're getting enough estrogen, but not too much. And we also want to make sure with how much estrogen you have that you are metabolizing it appropriately. Because when we look at estrogen metabolism, similar to females, you know, males and females are going to send it down the same pathway. So are you metabolizing it in an appropriate way? Are you making good, healthy estrogens, or are you making bad estrogens? And if you're making bad estrogens for males, that can look like man boobs, depression, mood swings, and prostate issues. So estrogen can also influence that prostate health, as well as your detoxification, right? Like, are you getting that good methylation out of the liver into the stool? Are you getting those estrogens out there appropriately? So that all of that process is an important flow, I think, in looking at what's happening with your testosterone production and your testosterone metabolism.
Makes sense. Yeah, I think there's a lot of guys who, you know, the interest is, I want to try TRT because it's going to give me energy, but we don't think about how things metabolize. And yes, there's a huge thing I see in my practice with, I don't want any estrogen. I'm like, do you want your bones to stay strong?
Yes. Yeah. And that's, I mean, there are lots of people, so More than once have I seen low estrogen actually contribute to erectile dysfunction. So yes, but once we were able to balance that estrogen, better function. And so, you know, it is a very delicate balance. And here's the other thing too. Like if you're not, you might have somebody that's getting testosterone injections, but they're just like, I don't really feel like it's doing anything. I actually feel like I'm gaining weight and, you know, I'm more moody or I'm not sleeping as well. And it's because they're shifting it all to estrogen, right? So if that's your tendency to shift everything to estrogen, we need to work on that first, right? Like let's get your body honing in on its own testosterone production first before we dump it with testosterone and then just convert it to estrogen.
Yes. Yes. I think we have a lot of guys, and I've seen this in my practice where I see a lot of firefighters. I'm just going to call them out. Sorry guys. Yeah. But you guys are like, I want more testosterone. Cause if I'm not feeling better now, I need more. And it's like, wait a minute.
Right. Right. Evaluate it first. I think that's not to say, I mean, we always want to look at your quality of life. We want to look at your cardiovascular health. We want to look at your bone health. We want to look at all of those longevity things too, right? Absolutely. But I think rather than just throwing testosterone at the problem, let's evaluate what your body's doing with your testosterone, because that's going to make a big difference, I think.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I can't tell you how many times, you know, I've looked at thyroid and been like, oh, wait a minute here. We've got some thyroid issues, or we'll check insulin and be like, what's going on? There,
totally
found yes. prolactin issues, so brain stuff.
Yes, yeah, it all starts here, right? So it's brain down, and so absolutely, absolutely, you don't want to miss the important steps in evaluating all of that.
Yeah, and so folks, this is why it's important to do comprehensive testing and really get a great, well-rounded plan here. Now, I think one of the last questions that I'll ask, just because I do see it down here on the bottom, and I didn't give you forewarning on this one, but it has to do with menopause. And it has to do with a gal who's been in menopause for over 10 years, and she's not been on bioidentical hormones at all, and she's wanting to consider them because she still has hot flashes. And she's wondering if the Dutch test would be a great way to determine if she's a candidate, because she's heard that after a decade of being postmenopausal, you shouldn't try bioidenticals. And so I'm not looking for health information. I'm just looking at, would the Dutch test be something to let her know what's going on?
Yeah, it's a great question. And, you know, some women, those lucky women, are all of a sudden like, oh, yeah, I just stopped, you know, having a cycle. And that's what it was. Which is amazing for them. But for most of us, you know, it's that transition, and that transition time can be different depending on the person. One of the things that I think is one of the most important things to test for, especially when we're perimenopause, well, even before menopause, is looking at your adrenal function. And the reason why I say that is because your adrenal glands become like your second ovaries.
Mm-hmm.
So when your ovaries are like, we're out, retirement, we're on the beach, see you later, your adrenal glands have to take on that responsibility for your estrogen, progesterone, testosterone. And if your adrenal glands are not in a good place, your transition to menopause is not going to be in a good place. And so in looking at the Dutch test, like, sure, it's likely going to show some low hormones, but it would also let us know how you're metabolizing those hormones. It would let us know what your androgen levels are looking like your testosterone and your DHEA, but it also gives a good picture of what your cortisol is doing. And a lot of times we want to focus on that adrenal presentation. And from there, we can figure out, okay, do we need to do other things with regard to your sex hormones?
Yeah. I think that's wonderful, the way you just described that. It was something I haven't heard since school, in terms of when the ovaries are done, the adrenals have to take over. You know, that's a good reminder for me to kind of really hone in and think about that. And it's a great way for ladies who maybe are like, hey, the Dutch test sounds interesting. I'm not having a ton of issues. Maybe I'm feeling stressed. Yes. Maybe, you know, all the COVID stuff has got me. And, you know,
2020.
Right. 2020 has got me. And I'm starting to like feel off a little bit, but I'm, you know, maybe I'm feeling like I'm getting older, and maybe I'm gaining a little weight here and there, but I don't have any overt symptoms. Maybe it's a great like preventative
baseline.
Tool.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Being able to see what that baseline is when you are not hugely symptomatic, versus if you get to that point of being symptomatic. Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. We have a lot of things to think about here, I think, for the folks that are listening. And now they're probably like, oh, my gosh, OK, where do I start? So for folks to head to your website and look to start finding a practitioner in their area. Obviously, folks who are listening to me in the Tacoma area know that Tacoma, Washington, I got you covered in the Death Blessing Department. For folks that are other places, tell us what they can find on your website, what resources to guide them to someone and get them started.
Absolutely. Reach out to our customer service. So we have a whole list of providers that are Dutch savvy. So depending on where you are at in the world, you can reach out to us and say like, hey, this is where I'm at. And we will try to get you connected to somebody who is Dutch literate so that you can get some testing and some answers.
That's awesome. And you guys who are listening, these guys do a ton of webinars for us. So we do learn a lot. And we also can call in if your lab results kind of befuddle us, we can call in and get some answers as well. So it's not like we're just looking at this and then trying to interpret it ourselves.
Yes, I will clarify that the call-in is for providers only, only because we're not allowed to talk through patient results because that's seen as treating. And you have a wonderful practitioner right here. And so we are here to support that process. Yes. But yes, tons of educational webinars. And you can go to DutchTest.com. There's a webinar podcast button. You can, you know, search in all of that. There's all sorts of fun stuff in there too.
All right. Well, Dr. Rice, thank you so much for coming on. I appreciate it. You've been a wealth of information. I know folks are going to love this podcast.
Thank you for having me. It's been fun. And obviously, like, let's chat more. I would love it.
Yes, I think we should keep the conversation going and keep the education going because a lot of people are hurting and they need the answers.
Yeah. Agreed.
Hey, Health Junkies, I hope you enjoyed my podcast. If you want to continue the conversation based on what topic I'm talking about at any given time on the Health Fix podcast, head over to my Facebook group, Find Your Health Fix. It's where we are talking about what's going on in health, what I'm talking about in the podcast, and I love to answer questions there. So come hang out and join the conversation. And by the way, right now I have a free Manage Your Stress Naturally course that you can grab on my website at drjkrausnd.com, because so many people are stressed out right now. And really, it has to do with the basics, your routines and simple habits that are messing you up. So head on over to drjkrausnd.com and go check out my free course on managing stress naturally. All right, folks, have a great day, whatever you're doing.
Subscribe, rate, and share info.